staring at my professor. "Stop, Lilia." I felt like a predator watching him. The way he easily manipulated the weapon left me convinced he practiced frequently. A hobby? Probably fitting for a man who cut bodies up for a living. A chill wound down my spine as that thought rooted itself in my head. In a normal human being, it might have triggered an urge to get the heck out of there, because what the hell kind of person would have been caught on a rocky cliff in the woods with a man who carved corpses at night? One who seemed exceptionally proficient with his weapons. Me, apparently, as I kept on staring, watching him throw a few more tosses, lunging and pivoting without a single blade bouncing off that trunk. For reasons I couldn't explain, I was mesmerized by his skill. Confused, but fascinated. Chest heaving, a shine of sweat coating his neck and arms, he tossed off his blade and turned toward the edge of the cliff, opposite me, where the ledge of rock stuck out over the sea. The moment his fingers hooked the hem of his shirt, like he was about to strip, I ducked. Oh, God. My brain urged me to leave and give the man some peace, but when I pushed off the rock to make sure he wouldn't see me exit, he wasn't standing there. Only his discarded clothes lay in a heap. I jolted forward, down the jagged slope until I just caught the tail end of his body splashing into the waves. Eyes darting back toward the top of the cliff, I estimated about a 50 or more foot drop. Oh, shit. I scrambled down the rock, back onto the stony shoreline to search for him. Seconds ticked away, and the horrific realization that I may have just watched the man leap to his death pummeled my conscience. Come on, don't be dead. Don't be dead. Off a little way, his head breached the water. The distance from the shore sent a chill down my spine when I imagined the depth there and what creatures might have lurked below him. I screwed my eyes shut on a shuddered breath, and when he began his swim back toward the rock, I decided I'd had enough excitement. Once again, I'd found myself more perplexed the more I observed. Who was this man? As I made my way back up the staircase toward my bike, I decided the questions would never be answered by watching him from afar. I needed to get closer, which meant I needed to make a dreaded office hours appointment. Chapter 21. Lilia. It took a damn week to get a meeting with Dr. Bramwell. The guy never answered his email, nor the phone number he'd listed on the syllabus. In lamenting to Jada, she told me to be audacious in my dealings with men in power positions. So 5 minutes into his lecture, I'd boldly asked him if I could make an appointment, and in return, he'd pinned me with a dagger-hurling glare. Then agreed to meet with me after class. Palms sweating, I trailed after him from the lecture auditorium, all the way to his office. Knots wound impossibly tight in my stomach, and as delicious as his cologne smelled, it only heightened my nausea. Eyes focused on the surrounding rooms kept me from staring at the way his ass moved in his black slacks. Undoubtedly firm, given what little I'd seen of those ass-hugging jeans he'd worn back at the cliff. "Stop it, Lilia!" Wincing, I mentally insisted that my eyeballs not veer back for another look. But that was the problem with my brain. Once I'd thought it, I couldn't unthink it, and it became a dangerous game of trying to ignore the issue. Thankfully, we reached his office, where he stuffed a skeleton-looking key into a black iron lock and swung the door open on a creak. The interior was relatively small, but brimming with medical texts and journals that lay in neat stacks on his desk and floor. The man liked tidiness. I took a seat in one of the chairs across from him as he fell into his seat on the other side of the desk.
"Miss Vespertine, I'm allotting 15 minutes for this meeting. Make them count."
I didn't waste any time. "I understand Noctisoma is rare in humans. How is it introduced?" Easing back in his chair, he steepled his fingers, staring at me, and I realized right then that I hadn't quite calculated just how intense his undivided attention would feel, how utterly consuming and threatening at the same time.
"I will be covering the history of Noctisoma in an upcoming lecture."
"I understand, and I am looking forward to that section, but according to your syllabus, you don't cover it until December." He quirked a brow.
"And?"
"Well, it's for personal reasons that I ask. Mostly that the class was a full 2 semesters back-to-back, and I might not get the information I needed if for some reason my tuition didn't cover a second semester. Annoyance colored his expression, and he sighed.
In the colonial era, the disease was believed to have been spread by the natives, who shot the larvae using blow darts into those they deemed a threat. It's hard to say how many cases emerged after the fall of the tribe, seeing as the island remained abandoned for a number of years. It reemerged about 30 years ago, when a wanderer camping in the woods stumbled upon the Nox berries and consumed them.
You're working on a cure for it, aren't you? In your lab. Is that why you removed the larvae? He stared at me silently for a moment, and as much as I wanted to look away because, goddamn, the man was intimidating, I didn't.
Your questions have begun to traipse a delicate line as they relate to my activities.
Sorry, I'm just curious, is all.
Curiosity often leads us down a precarious path.
You say that as if you've walked it yourself. The corner of his lips twitched, and he leaned forward, resting his elbows against his shiny desk.
To answer, I am studying the organism to gain a better understanding of how it affects the human body.
Instead of blurting off the first question that popped in my head, namely, how the hell had my mother become infected, I considered my words carefully. Do you get many cases from the mainland?
No.
If one were to contract it, though, is it spread person to person?
Rarely.
I frowned at that. How the hell else would my mother have gotten it? I'd never seen a Noxberry in my life until I came to Dracadia. Well, it must be.
Are you asking questions or trying to convince me, Miss Vespertine?
My mother died of Noctisoma. I dared him to argue that.
Our facility would have been the one to confirm such a diagnosis if it had been properly diagnosed. What's her name?
It doesn't matter. She refused to see a doctor.
And the autopsy?
He asked in an almost bored tone.
Surely it would have shown evidence of noctisomal pathology.
If it had, it had been encrypted in coroner language that I didn't speak. What kind of pathology?
Bone striations and liver decomposition, most notably.
I couldn't recall seeing any of that. The most notable issue, aside from blood loss, was fluid in her lungs. Perhaps they missed that. Jaw shifting, he narrowed his eyes.
Is your mother from the island?
He countered. No.
Did she attend Dracadia? Visit here? Live here for any length of time?
I didn't like the way he was ruling it out before my very eyes, but I answered honestly. No. He gave an insouciant shrug that made me want to reach across the desk and smack him.
Then chances are it wasn't Noctisoma.
I know what I saw, Professor. Black worms like the ones in the midnight lab. I saw them crawl out of her body. I gestured toward my mouth. Like they were trying to escape.
Death can be difficult to process, Miss Vespertine.
Frustration curled in my stomach with the way the guy was trying to refute everything, like I had imagined it all. I'd gone too many years believing that lie. To hell with that. And to hell with him. I hadn't imagined any of it. I knew that now. It was not shock or hallucination, it was real. Maybe I looked to be on the verge of crying because he eased back in his chair and let out a long, exasperated exhale.
Very well. It was real. Unfortunately, I did not examine your mother, so I can't say for certain how she may, or may not, have become infected. I'm only sharing what decades of study have taught me.
Releasing a sigh, I nodded. I'd gotten worked up again, and he was right. Maybe I had gotten caught up in trying to convince him. My apologies for getting upset.
If I've answered all your questions, perhaps you might let me return to my work.
May I ask one more question?
Of course.
My mouth suddenly turned dry as the strong possibility of rejection needled me. I wondered if you might have any lab assistant positions open.
Ross can direct you to available positions, but they fill quickly.
I don't mean general lab. I mean, be audacious. I mean working with you. He didn't even give the question enough time to linger before he batted it away with a swift...
No, I'm afraid not.
It wouldn't have to be the whole semester. I scooted forward in my chair, the desperation goading me to sound like a whiny beggar. I'm happy to be a dishwasher or prep reagents. Maybe just...
No, Miss Vespertine. I do not take students' assistants in my lab in any capacity. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to return to my work.
He let out a grunt, and his hands flew to either side of his skull. Eyes screwed shut, he clenched his teeth, and a hiss of a moan was the only sound he made before tumbling from his seat to the floor. Professor! Dropping my bag, I rounded his desk to find him curled into himself, his hands covering his ears.
Fuck!
He pressed the heel of his palm to his temple. My whole body shook with adrenaline, my heart racing in my chest. The scenario took me back to the nights when my mother would suffer horrible headaches. Not knowing what else to do, I dropped to the floor beside him. A look of agony claimed his face, his body shaking uncontrollably. Seizure. It was a seizure. I mentally ran through the checklist of what I remembered reading about seizures in one of my medical textbooks. Remove anything dangerous. I pushed his chair out of the way, and as I glanced around the room, tip number two came to mind. Nabbing his suit coat draped over the arm of a leather couch, I crumpled it into a ball and gently pushed it under his head. After that, I loosened his tie and unlatched the top two buttons of his shirt. While part of me felt strange, another part didn't feel or think at all. I ran on pure adrenaline in that moment. He trembled and shook as I gingerly pushed at his shoulder to turn him on his side. Biting my nail, I looked up at the clock to see that it had already lasted about 4 minutes. I slipped my hand in his just to let him know I was there, as I'd always done with my mother. He whispered something, and I leaned forward, trying to make out what he'd said.
Impervious,
he whispered again. Impervious? Had I heard him right? The trembles slowed. His breathing slowed. Beads of sweat had gathered on his forehead, and his face had turned ghostly white. But it seemed the seizure had subsided. Professor? I gave his hand a light squeeze, and his eyes shot open. He jerked back, nearly cracking his head on the desk.
Don't touch me! Don't fucking touch me!
The command arrived as a growled warning, and I tumbled backward, kicking myself away from him. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure you were okay. Wearing a mask of confusion, he pushed to a sitting position and looked around. As his gaze landed on his balled-up coat, his jaw hardened.
That's a $500 coat crumpled on the floor,
he said, tossing the jacket onto his chair.
Next time you decide to crumple something, consider using your own.
Any sympathy I may have had drained out of me right then. Seriously? You just had a seizure in front of me and you're worried about a little dust on your coat?
Welcome to my Tuesday. This is nothing new.
He pushed to his feet until standing over me. I didn't like the dynamic of him looking down on me right then, so I jumped to my feet as well. I guess I shouldn't have bothered to stick around then.
I guess you shouldn't have.
Asshole prick bastard. Forgive me for being a decent human being.
A decent human being would have given a man some dignity by leaving when she was excused.
He ground the last word through his teeth. It occurred to me then. He wasn't angry at me, per se, but perhaps a bit embarrassed. In spite of the urge to verbally duke it out with him and not back down, I softened my voice. My apologies. I sprang into action without much thought.
You certainly...
His jaw hardened again, the muscle ticked, as he clearly fought to restrain his words. On a sharp breath, he buttoned his shirt and adjusted his tie back into place.
A bit overboard.
With a shrug, I clasped my hands so that he wouldn't see how badly I was shaking right then. I was just trying to make you comfortable is all, sir. His eyes skated to me on the last word, his jaw shifting.
You may leave now, Miss Vespertine.
With a quiet nod, I gathered my bag. I didn't know why I felt disappointed leaving his office, aside from the fact that my plan to assist in his lab had been savagely turned down. It wasn't like I was expecting him to wrap me in a hug for sticking around through all of that. A thank you would have been nice, though.
Chapter 22. Devrick.
Ah, damn it!
Barletta held up his hand, shielding himself from the flashlight I shined through the bars at him. A silvery glow reflected from his eyes, giving him an unsettling appearance, one common in those infected with Noctisoma. Tapetum lucidum.
What?
It's what makes certain animals appear to have glowing eyes. I lowered the flashlight and took a seat in the chair just outside of his cell. Humans, of course, don't have this, but the organism is nocturnal and requires it. With the heel of his palm, he rubbed his eyes, groaning.
I can't stand the light! It hurts!
You no longer need it. Lowering his hands, he stared off, a troubled look twisting up his expression.
I don't want to see the things I've seen lately.
What kinds of things? I hiked my arm over the back of the chair, already knowing what he was going to tell me.
My son!
Blinking hard, he seemed to choke back tears and cleared his throat.
The blood from his skull, he said, gesturing to his own. He came to me last night. It was like a dream, a fucking nightmare.
Hallucinations are common. The organism sometimes uses these images to manipulate you. The sadness in his eyes from moments ago darkened to dread.
You mean I'm going to be seeing my son like this again?
Yes. Guilt is a wonderful manipulator. He stared off, the slow furrowing of his brow indicating the news troubled him.
You said a while back that you'd reveal the why of all this. Why me?
I did say that, didn't I? I sat forward and rested my elbows on the tops of my thighs. Perhaps it's best to revisit the story of my childhood. After all, what good is a reveal, a twist, if it has absolutely no impact? Crossing his arms, he shook his head.
Did I wrong you somehow?
I let out a mirthless laugh. Yes, Mr. Barletta, you absolutely wronged me. But we'll get to that soon enough.
That night with corpses, is that what messed you up? Why you took me off the streets to watch me go through this shit? You got some kind of trauma that you need to take it out on someone else.
Messed me up. Abusers had such a warped view of reality. Unamused with his accusation, I didn't bother to answer the last question. In fact, every muscle in my body fought not to reach in through the bars and strangle the life out of him right then. It was only the consolation of knowing what was coming to him that settled my thoughts. That night would be one of many. My father had effectively found a means to scare the shit out of me, and he used that power every chance he got, until I eventually became as dead inside as those corpses.
Didn't you have a mother looking out for you?
My mother died giving birth. My brother and I only had Hannah, the maid. And because she was older and my father had no interest in fucking her, she was the only one who stayed. A vision of Hannah gently rubbing my back during one of my episodes somehow brought to mind Lilia in my office. Her gentle movements and caring eyes, the delicate hand in mine. There was something about her, so genuine and real. I'd hated that she'd seen me like that, on the floor, helpless, as the pain racked every muscle in my body like a jolt of white, hot flames. It was as I came out of it, when her blurred-out face had sharpened into view, and those blue-green eyes watched me with worry and panic, that something had shifted inside of me, rousing an inexplicable ache in my chest. Yet, all that had come to mind in that moment were the words of my father whenever I'd had an episode as a boy.
You were always the weaker one. Pathetic.
So, how did I wrong you?
Barletta's voice snapped me out of my musings. The answer slipped on the fringes of my mind, but I refused to dip my thoughts into those dark and murky waters. Not yet. A swelling ache throbbed at my temples. Inky blackness slithered into my consciousness, and once again I fell prey to the memories.
Tell me who laughed at you.
Cademan sits on the edge of the bed, staring at me as I stare out the window. I was sent home earlier that day when a headache struck. My whole body froze with it, and I ended up pissing myself in front of my classmates.
All of them?
Then I'll punish them all. I don't respond, just keep staring out the window.
What did the voices say to you?
He prods. I sometimes hear them when I'm locked away in that closet. Strange voices that whisper secrets. Promises of death. I don't remember now. In my periphery, Cademan reaches for my hand.
You're cold.
It's only the realization that he touched my skin that breaks my staring. Not that I could feel it. I feel nothing in my hands or arms, not since the night my father struck me in the head. I yank my arm away, repulsed by the lack of sensation. It's an unnerving thing to watch someone touch you, yet feel nothing. I have to leave this place, Cademan. We have to go far from here.
Where?
I don't know. Far away, where he can't hurt us anymore. Or perhaps you should stop inciting his anger. Every day you test his patience, Devrick. He quickly looks away, knowing damn well that my punishments have never once fit the crime. Father has always been harsh with me, Doesn't matter what I do, how hard I try to stay on his good side. He hates me. He always has. And Cade knows it. I had two headaches today. Dr. Mensch says they'll get worse. Cade snaps his attention back toward me, that pathetic and all too familiar look of worry in his eyes. And the spasms? I couldn't move. Couldn't breathe. I thought I was dying. His lips peel back to an angry snarl. And so, what's he doing about it? I'm the one who turns away this time. I stare out on the yard below my window, watching a hawk swoop down on a smaller bird. There's nothing he can do. Someday they'll get so bad my heart will stop. I don't want to die in this place. In this house. Panic washes over me, and I curl into myself, trembling as the fear grips me. He's going to put me back in that room with the corpses again. He's going to make me sleep in there. I need to get out of here. I need out. I rub the top of my head raw. Death is coming for me, Cade. He's going to get me. Hey. Cade wraps his arms around me, but I push out at him, thumping the heel of my palm against his chest to break his embrace. Shh. It's okay, Dev. He whispers, trying to settle me. The next time he throws you in there, I want you to say a word. A powerful word, okay? I still in his embrace and breathe hard through my nose. What word? Impervious. Impervious? Yes. It means nothing bad can hurt you. Ever. When you feel like death is coming for you, you say that word. Death can't touch you then. You're sick. Once again, the sound of Barletta's voice broke me from my memories. That's why you're doing this. Something made you sick. Not something. Someone. I paused for a moment, wondering how much I should divulge to a complete stranger. Didn't matter, really. The man would soon succumb to infection, and all our conversations would slip into the void along with him. I have a rare genetic disorder. It's called Vonerick's disease. It remains dormant until late in life, unless triggered by trauma. The whack to your head. Your old man triggered it. Yes. Every day I live with the risk that it will seize up my heart and I'll go into cardiac arrest. If it's genetic, does that mean your brother has it too? Had, I corrected. His brows flickered, and he shifted where he sat on the cot. He's no longer alive. No, he isn't. As many years ago as it was, the anger still clawed inside of me, begging to be cut loose. And no, not every child is affected by the disease. But as I said, we'll get to that soon enough. I suspect you're probably starving right now. I am. He eyed the dish I'd placed beside the chair when I first arrived. I've been craving weird shit, like rare meat. Noctosoma utilizes iron to produce the proteins that create physiological changes. Your reflective eyes, for example. It depletes the iron in your blood, and you will crave it. I removed the silver platter lid from a plate of rare steak, potatoes and green beans that I'd had the chef at Derrigan Hall prepare for me. At the bottom of the cell bars was a small door, through which I slipped the food to him. With a frenzied excitement, he yanked the plate toward him and lifted the thick slab of meat with both hands, consuming it like an animal. Blood dripped down his arms, the meat rare enough that it probably bordered on carrying a potential foodborne illness. Not that it mattered. Any bacterial infection he might have otherwise suffered would have been swiftly destroyed by the Noctosoma, who didn't much care for competition. As he plowed through his dinner, I shoved a small cup of water into his cell, which he quickly swiped up and swigged to the point of an obnoxious slurp. "Why so little to drink? I'm thirsty," he said, handing it back to me as if I had any intentions of giving him more. "Your brain is telling you that you're thirsty."
"My fucking lips are dry as a bone."
He shoveled in a forkful of potatoes, and I grimaced, watching it slide down the corners of his mouth onto his plate, from where he scooped it up again. "Yes, I suppose they are. The parasite wants you to move toward a source of water so it can eventually kill you. In fact, if it didn't require your healthy organs to grow, it'd be perfectly content living inside of you underwater." He paused his abhorrent eating and stared off for a moment.
"Fucking hell. Every time you tell me about this thing, I get more freaked out. Is this going to be like one of those alien scenes where it pops out of my chest?
It won't be pretty or pleasant, but nothing quite so theatrical as that, no. Gaze lowered, he shook his head as he scooped up some of the green beans.
It's fucked up,
he said around a mouthful of veggies.
I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life right now, like I could run a goddamn marathon.
I shrugged. You probably could.
But that won't happen, right?
He speared another round of green beans onto his fork, not bothering to look at me.
You don't plan to let me go after all this?
No, I don't. Why lie to the guy, or sugarcoat the inevitable? I need the organism growing inside of you, and I intend to harvest them when you die.
What for?
I rubbed my fingers together, but only the uncomfortable tingle of pressure there prickled my skin like tiny jolts of electricity. Again, I found myself thinking back to Lilia's hand in mine, how the prickling sensation had marked her gentle caress. So that I can feel again.
What? Like you can't feel anything? At all?
No. It's like being trapped inside a corpse. He snorted a laugh and shook his head, diving into his mashed potatoes again.
Must drive you nuts.
I ground my teeth while watching him, something dark twisting my guts. It drives me. He must have picked up on the ire in my voice as he glanced up and rolled his shoulders back.
These worms are the cure?
No. I pushed up from the chair and stuffed my hands into my pockets. Their toxins are the cure. Unfortunately, they're not easy to manufacture in a lab. It takes a fresh human body.
Am I the first you've, you know, infected like this?
Gaze lowered, I paced. No. There was another before you. He ran his tongue over his teeth and tapped his fork against his plate. A plastic plate, after the little mishap with the bottle he'd thrown at me.
How long you think you can get away with it?
I suspect until I do something foolish and get caught.
I can see you're no fool,
he said with an air of disappointment.
Can I ask you a favor?
I stopped pacing. No.
It's nothing big, just some pencil and paper. I'd like to write a letter to my sons.
Of course I wouldn't allow it, not even if I read the damn thing before mailing it off. He didn't deserve forgiveness. He didn't even deserve to ask. Yet, it might have served as a bargaining chip later. I suppose I can accommodate this one request.
I'd appreciate it. You know, my son has seizures, since he was little.
Yes, I'm aware. He let out a shaky breath and dropped his gaze to the plate again.
You think I caused him?
I'm not his physician. I wouldn't know. However, you've certainly not made things better for him. The silvery glint of his eyes wavered with what I imagined were tears.
You won't hurt them too, will you? My wife and my sons.
I have no reason to harm your family. I don't hurt children like you. He flinched and swiped at his nose.
You know, this sobriety thing really fucking sucks.
I waited a few more minutes, watching him shovel in the last bites of his meal.
You gonna finish your story?
He asked, pushing the plate back through the bars of his cell.
Still curious to know what all this has to do with me.
Next visit, I promised, and I swiped up his plate before heading back to my office.
Chapter 23. Lilia. As I approached Emmerich Hall from my entomology class, my book bag buzzed. I lifted my phone out, and seeing the academic advisor from B's school calling sent my brain into panic. Hello? Miss Vespertine? Yes. It's Janet Kempfel. Everything is okay with B. A flash of relief shot through me, quickly snuffed when she added, I'm calling in regard to B's tuition. Do you have a moment? With only 4 minutes before class, I rounded the corner to something of a narrow alley between Emmerich and Descartes' halls for privacy. Yes. I'm just wondering when you might be able to send payment. The account is 60 days behind, and... Well, I don't want to have to do this, but we may need to disenroll your sister. Wait, What? What do you mean, 60 days? I sent $1,000 just a few weeks ago. Connor's payment should have put us 2 months ahead. Miss Vespertine, we've not received a payment from Mr. Doyle since June. We've tried numerous times to contact him, but he never seems to return our calls. The payment you sent covered July's tuition, but now August and September are due. Pangs of nausea needled my gut. Bending over, I clutched my stomach, which had begun to fold into gnarled knots of shock. I truly hate to make this phone call, Miss Vespertine. I know how much your sister loves the school, and please, I'm begging you, Miss Kempfel. I will get you the money. I clenched my eyes shut and breathed through my nose to keep from throwing up. Can you give me some time? I know you're doing what you can, and you've always been very timely with your half of payment. There is a low-income grant that might offer a 30-day extension. I can certainly speak to our provost and look into that for you. Beyond that, though, you would need to make payment for the 30 days you're still behind. I understand. I promise I'll get you the money. Again, my apologies for having to make this call, Lilia. Your sister is one of our best students, and she has made great progress here. I appreciate your investment in her, and I will do everything I can to keep her enrolled. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Thank you. On those parting words, I clicked out of the call and scrolled through my contacts for Connor's number. The phone rang and rang before going straight to his voicemail. Teeth grinding, I ended the call and dialed again and again. After the fourth try, I texted him a simple message. Call me immediately. Enraged, I ground my teeth as I stuffed the phone into my pocket. Voices from the other end of the alley caught my attention, and I backed myself to the wall, alongside an arborvitae shrub. Peering around it showed Gilchrist and Spencer walking toward the alley. Once inside the shady passage between buildings, she shoved Spencer against the wall and ran her palm over the crotch of his jeans as she slammed her lips against his. Frowning, I only just caught her leaning in to kiss him before I flattened myself to the wall, feeling like I'd seen something forbidden. A buzz of discomfort hummed through me as I scurried back toward the front of Emmerich Hall, my head trying to process whether or not I'd just seen some kind of messed-up hallucination. The sight of it wouldn't have shocked me near as much if I hadn't witnessed Gilchrist pining after Professor Bramwell just a week ago. When I glanced up, the devil himself strode up, a black leather bag slung over his shoulder, and his gaze buried in whatever book he was reading. As the two of us converged toward the entrance, he finally peeled his attention from his reading, eyes on me as he breezed past while folding his book closed.
"Miss Vespertine,"
he said, the acknowledgement nearly kicking me backward onto my ass. "Professor Bramwell?" I responded, offering a respectful nod. He disappeared inside, and I trailed after him, scurrying toward my usual seat in Gilchrist's class. The moment I took my seat, my phone buzzed with a text from Connor.
"What's up?"
I choked back the urge to throw my phone against the wall as I texted back. "What the hell is going on with B's tuition? Kempfel said you haven't made a payment in months."
"Something came up. I planned to catch up this month, but then the shit with Angela went down, and now I'm drowning in bills."
In other words, the shady deals he had going with Angelo to make extra cash had gone awry. "You promised me. They're going to kick her out."
"I told you, she doesn't need that school. She just needs more friends."
"Don't do this. I'm hanging on by a thread here. Can you at least make one payment?"
"I need a few weeks."
"I need you to swear you'll make this payment, please."
"Hey, how goes it?"
Irritated by the intrusion, I tucked my phone away and looked up to see Spencer looming over me. A flashing image of Gilchrist fondling his crotch flickered through my brain, and I shook my head, mentally batting it away. "Good, thanks."
"Everything okay? You looked stressed."
"Family issues." With a snort, he slid into the seat beside me.
"You too?"
The frustrated bitch half of me wanted to tell him rich people problems weren't the same. But instead, I mustered as much of a smile as I could, despite the absolute chaos inside my head right then.
"Hey, want to meet for lunch later?"
Schooling my face so as not to look entirely confused, I glanced toward Gilchrist, who stood at the lectern, unpacking her computer, eyes locked on Spencer. How the hell was I supposed to respond without looking like the creep who'd spied on them? "Don't you have a girlfriend?"
"Nah."
He sank further in his seat and hiked his elbow up on the back of it.
"But what does it matter? It's just lunch. Gotta eat, right?"
Right. Another glance toward Gilchrist showed her still staring up at him. It was then that Mel's words from before echoed inside my mind. He's a manipulator. Not that I'd entirely take her word on who or what someone was, but his persistence in being around me did strike me as odd. Even if I gave him the benefit of being a nice guy, I found it a little strange. I think I'm going to pass this time. I've got a lot going on. Not that I wanted to be a jerk, I just wasn't in the right headspace for casual lunch conversation when my world had flipped on its ass. While his smile wilted to a downcast expression, he nodded.
Were you able to get a meeting with my father?
He asked. No, I didn't bother, to be honest. Aside from thanking him for allowing me to attend the school, I really had no other reason to take up his time. I wasn't sure why Professor Gilchrist had insisted I seek him out. Still feeling slightly bad about turning Spencer down for lunch, I sighed. The guy had consistently been decent to me, and I suspected it was my own insecurities and thoughts about guy friends in general that had me skeptical of his intentions. I hadn't planned to avoid making friends here, after all. Would you consider meeting up tomorrow for lunch? His eyes lit up.
Yeah, sure. Cool.
That would at least let some of the chaos settle in my head, because at that moment, I had no freaking clue how I was going to make up those missed payments. I'm just starting to get settled here, and Connor has already shit on things. Like, it doesn't matter how far away I get, the guy shits on everything. Lying in my bed, back at the dorm, I stared up at the ceiling while listening to Jada yell at her two kids, who were apparently getting rowdy in the background. She returned with a groan. How desperate are you feeling right now? Not enough to consider sex for money, yet. I rolled onto my stomach and traced the yellow stitching in my quilt. It's not exactly sex for money. Her voice was lower that time, and the lack of noise in the background told me she'd cornered herself in a quiet place. I frowned. What are you talking about? There's a website I heard about. I fell onto my back again, slapping a hand over my forehead. Jada, I'm not... Now, wait a second, hear me out. It's all anonymous. You don't show your face or anything. Pinching the bridge of my nose, I shook my head, already knowing I had no intentions of agreeing, but I was admittedly curious. What is it? Just be open-minded, okay? Because I happen to know someone who got paid to do this. Your cousin? No, it wasn't my cousin. The tone of her voice told me she was hesitant to say, and I shot up in bed. It was you! Was it you? Look, I wouldn't suggest this, but you're in a tight spot, and I can speak from experience. The payout is worth it. The excitement in her voice had me a little more than curious all of a sudden. What did you do? So, just keep an open mind, okay? You already said that. Right. She blew out a breath that rattled through the phone. So, I softened the peach in public. What? I paddled the pink canoe in the parking lot at Daly's Market. Paddled the what? I shook my head, trying to decipher what the hell she was talking about. What are you saying? Damn it all, I finger-banged myself, okay? You masturbated in public? Yeah, and not gonna lie, it was the hottest fucking thing I've ever done. She let out a nervous chuckle as I sat, daring myself to imagine her pregnant self doing something like that at Daly's Market of all places. You get paid by tokens, and the site includes a small fee in those tokens, so it all basically goes to you. I made 200 off that video, plus tips, and I didn't even need to show my face. Damn, 200. Jada wouldn't have lied about that. You get paid right away? Yep. The more risque, the more you get paid. I guess some men are into pregnant women. You could totally play the schoolgirl with your short skirt and knee-high socks. Jada, I'm not showing up to class looking like Britney Spears circa 1998. This is college, for fuck's sake. No one wears knee-high socks. Suit yourself. But I'm telling you, a young thing like you with your toned little thighs and short skirts would make a lot of bank. I shook my head in a desperate bid not to seriously consider what she was suggesting. Don't you have to verify your age or something? I'd be outing myself with an ID. Not on this site. Don't know how they get away with it, but they do. Look, it's not like you're making a career out of it, Lilia. A few videos and you could be back on track with tuition. Shit, they might like the schoolgirl thing, and you could make tuition with a single video. God, I hated the way she made it sound so damn easy and enticing. that all my problems could potentially be solved in a single conversation with her. Do I have to make any sounds? They just like the wet sounds. Well, this just keeps getting worse. I groaned and she shushed me. You don't have to moan or anything, but maybe do it where other people are talking so they know it's in public. Covering my eyes with a palm, I huffed. This is just wrong. Look, Connor is an asshole. He's never going to be there for you and B, okay? And now that he's hooked up with Angelo, any hope of decency is gone. You got to figure shit out yourself, Lilia. Remember when I said, be audacious. Don't let a man take this dream. Do whatever the fuck you got to do to keep it. She was right. Damn it. Relying on Connor was like praying for snow in hell. As decent as the guy might have been, he just wasn't cut out for dad shit. Uprooting B and throwing her into the same space as Angelo and whatever criminal shit he had going on would have been detrimental. I needed to take the reins on things, to figure things out myself. When she graduated, it'd be on her, but until then, I needed to step up. How is it possible for me to hate and love you at the same time? Jada chuckled. You love me more than you hate me. True. I blew out a resigned breath and glanced around my room, wishing I could have just done the video there. But as Jada had said, the more risque, the more money, and I couldn't think of anything more risque than in class. Okay, I got my midnight lab coming up, so I need to let you go. You take care of yourself, and let me know if you decide to do it. I will. The moment I hung up the phone, I thumped my palm to my forehead and shot Jada a quick text. I forgot to ask the name of the site. Voyeur Bait. Even the name has to be creepy, right? Ignore the name. I slipped out of bed, and on an exasperated sigh, I stared out the window at the courtyard below. Students bustled about, looking as carefree as birds hopping to and fro. I couldn't help but wonder if any of them were trying to wrap their heads around some massive roadblock in life right then, or were actual classes their only source of stress. Why the hell does my life have to be such a mess all the time? As I scanned over the grounds, I caught sight of something off in the distance. Squinting, I leaned forward, peering through the window toward the oak between Shanlot Hall and the clock tower. A figure cloaked in a long cape and what looked very much like a plague doctor's mask. A sharp breath flew out of me as I stumbled backward, tripping over my desk chair, and landed with a hard thud on my ass. Hot needles of pain shot up my spine, and I flinched, pushing to my feet. When I stared out the window again, I saw nothing there, only students walking about. Great. Not only is my life a shit show, but I'm still seeing things that don't exist. With a huff, I fell onto my bed and rested my head against my palms. My phone screen lit up with a text from B. Hey, is everything okay? I tried to buy snacks with my food pass earlier, and it says it was reduced. I wanted to cry right then. Everything is fine. Just a little confusion with your account is all. The reduction is temporary. It's fine, Lil. I don't need to be eating snacks between meals anyway. Just wanted to make sure all was okay. I wanted to tell her it wasn't. That I was on the verge of tears trying to figure out what to do. Instead, I texted back. No worries. All is great. If you and Connor are having a hard time right now, I can get a job. I'm going to be 17, you know. Her offer would have been wonderful, but I didn't have the heart to remind her of the last job she'd taken a few months back, which had swiftly come to an end when she'd had one of her episodes and screamed at one of the patrons. She'd thrown a milkshake in the woman's face, ultimately ending her very short stint at the ice cream shop. Not that I was free from having suffered episodes myself, but mine so far hadn't resulted in attacking anyone. No need. Just a temporary issue. Okay. How's Dracadia? It's beautiful, like Hogwarts without the wands. Ah, cool. Can't wait to see you at Christmas. Same. Love you. Love you too. Fuck. I was going to do it, wasn't I? I was really going to film myself in class. But when? Lab would be perfect. The TA usually lectured for the first 20 minutes of class, and we all had our own benches with cupboards at either side. Mine was the back bench, which meant no one would see me. Not unless Spencer got snoopy all of a sudden. The thought made my stomach curl. $200, Lilia. $200 that could reduce the $2,000 still owed. The decision slowly cemented itself in my head. I was really going to do it.
Chapter 24. Beverick. With gloved hands, I lifted Barletta's tongue. Superior and inferior lip, as well as sublingual papilla, demonstrates venexus, I dictated into my phone. Dentition is otherwise normal, bilateral scleral icterus, bilateral tapetum lucidum, dry mucous membranes. I placed my stethoscope against his back, listening for a moment, then moved it higher and across his spine to the other side. Upper airway sounds are heard diffusely across all lung fields. Slight rattling, but non-productive cough, and dictation.
Dictation ended.
The robotic feminine voice answered back. A horrific yet distinct odor clung to the air, one reminiscent of death, which was typical in the infected. I didn't have much explanation for it, seeing as humans weren't the parasite's natural host. Perhaps it served a purpose in its other victims.
"What's Vonexus?" Barletta asked, sitting calmly on his cot.
I turned his arm over to a skinny black map of veins in his wrist.
"That can't be good. Fuck! What's happening?"
He quickly turned his head away and coughed, shooting bright red spittle onto the concrete.
"I'm so thirsty. I need water."
"The amount of water I give you throughout the day is enough. I told you what's happening, Mr. Barletta. These are normal progressions of infection."
"It's not enough water. I'm getting cramps at night, hallucinating. Shit's worse than detox."
It had only just begun. I didn't turn my back on him as I packed up my equipment and made my way toward the cell door. While he didn't seem to have much motivation for escape right then, that would inevitably change. Physical exams would become wrestling matches soon enough. Thankfully, guilt kept him in check for the most part, and it was a weakness I intended to play off for as long as his conscience mattered to him. But it'd soon be a fleeting emotion.
"You're not leaving, are you?"
He ran his hand through his hair and frowned when he lowered his arm to see a clump of strands in his palm. Throat bobbing with a gulp, he tossed it away.
"It's so fucking quiet down here. I can't stand the quiet."
"I have some papers to grade."
"Wait,"
he lurched forward. "You were supposed to tell me some more of your story. Your childhood, remember?" I actually needed to get back to the lab, but I responded, "Very well." "You said if the seizures reach your heart, you'll have a heart attack. That ever happened?" "Not quite cardiac arrest, no, but I did have quite a scare once." I closed my eyes on the memory of that fateful day, the one that forever changed the course of my life.
"Her tits are sheer perfection,"
Cademan says with an air of awe in his voice, from where he sits, crouched inside a small linen closet.
"I cannot believe she hides them beneath those ugly fucking sweaters she wears."
The closet adjacent to the women's staff locker room holds a small carving, an eyeball hole that peers in at the perfect angle on one of the staff showers. Story goes, some screwball maintenance guy put the hole there 2 years ago and got caught jacking off. He apparently never told anyone about the hole, though. Not that I'd ever personally peered through it. Still, can't stand closets. Not since that night. Von Neric Academy is a small prep school affiliated with our father's alma mater, Dracadia University. Our family name affords us the kind of pardon few other students are offered, and the two of us exploit it to the utmost degree. At 17, we've gone through 5 other prep schools, each one offering a quiet exit to keep from marring our record. One more, and my father will probably have us sent off to some drug cartel farm in the heart of Mexico. The hole, as everyone calls it, is one act of insubordination we can't pass up, though. Cademan and I are like tour guides for the depraved, leading small groups of underclassmen to our secret peep show. My brother has seen damn near every female teacher's tits and ass, and is something of a self-professed expert on the topic. One of the kids pushes at Cademan for a peek, and with a smirk, I shake my head. Not a beat later, my brother wails him in the face with his fist. The poor kid flies backward under the concrete floor, groaning. Blood trickles from what will probably be a split lip.
"Next one who pushes gets knocked out, asshole."
With a nod toward the group, he asks, "Who's next?" 3 boys cluster around him, but Cademan chooses one. I stay in the hallway of the tunnel to keep a lookout and light up a smoke, waiting for each member of the group to get their peek. 15 minutes later, the boys file out, some dragging their feet with disappointment. Probably didn't get much of a look, seeing as the teachers only shower for so long. Once the boys have cleared out and begun their trek back to our dorms, Cademan exits the closet, counting cash.
$50.
He hands off 25 of it to me, and taking another drag of my smoke, I stuff the cash into my pocket. It's not like either of us needs the cash. Just gives us something to do.
Aren't you even the least bit curious, Devrick?
He snags a cigarette from my fingers and takes a long drag.
Of course I am. Not even a pair of tits is worth it, though.
Besides, I don't need to watch them through a peephole. I'd already gotten intimate with Miss Chandler's tits in the boathouse after rope practice. The same day she confessed to wanting a threesome with my brother.
He really fucked you up.
Anyway, we better head back. Caesar said if I'm late to first hour again, he's going to sever my hand and send the bones home to Father. Caesar is the guard Father hired to keep an eye on the two of us. Not a bodyguard, of course. The asshole is a former mafia soldier who only cares about his own ass. His only job is to make sure Cademan and I stay out of trouble. Or, rather, out of Father's hair.
A man after our own father's heart.
Cademan grabs the knob of the closet to close the door when a clacking sound, like shoes on concrete, echoes down the hall. The two of us dart toward the curve in the hallway, toward the sound, and flatten ourselves against the wall, peering around the corner of it into another corridor. Naked light bulbs and rusty cages illuminate the long passage down, which two figures stride toward us. Men we've never seen before, but both of them wear black suits, and in each of their hands is a gun.
Come on,
I whisper yell to Cademan, yank him back. The door at the end of the hall is locked, as always, a dead end, so we run in the other direction, back toward the closet. The sound of footfalls grows louder. Any moment, the men will turn the corner and find us. Who knows who the hell they are, or what they want, but them finding us down here isn't a good idea, either way. At a hard yank of my arm, I turn to see Cademan pulling me toward the closet. I shake my head.
I can't. I won't. No, no! We have nowhere to go, Devrick. Come on!
The footsteps close in on the corner. Cademan slaps his hand over my mouth and drags me into the closet with him. Panic stirs in my gut, winding upward like a tornado to my chest. I wheeze behind his hand for a breath, the small bit of air through my nose not nearly enough. Light thins as he closes the door, still holding me against him, until we're bathed in darkness.
I'm right here, Devrick, he whispers in my ear. Focus on my voice.
Through shaky breaths, I close my eyes, my whole body trembling and stiff. The vague grip of his hand breaches the numbness that has my arms feeling ice cold and thick.
You're going to be okay. Nothing is going to happen. Focus on my voice, Dev.
A stabbing pain strikes my skull, and I throw my hands up, knocking his arm away. I collapse to my knees. Warmth trickles down my thighs and pools onto the floor, leaking beneath the crack in the door. My muscles harden, 1,000 tiny knots pulling beneath my skin. Light blasts into the closet, and through a blur in my eyes, I stare up at both men. A blackness slinks in from the fringes, threatening to pull me under. Something jostles my body.
Leave him alone, Cademan cries out.
A dark nightmare swallows me whole.
He pissed himself, an unfamiliar voice growls. Take the other.
An intense pain strikes my muscles, and I collapse to the floor into a wet puddle. Through a haze, I watch one of the men drag Cademan away. Hauled off by an arm to his throat, my brother stares back at me, eyes wide with fear.
You can't leave him! He's going to die! He'll die!
Impervious. I open my mouth to scream the word. Nothing comes out.
Impervious!
I finally cry out.
Impervious!
Shoes step into view, and it's then I realize the second man is standing over me. For a moment, I think he's going to drag me off with my brother. Instead, he draws back his fist and hammers it into my cheek, setting off an explosion of light that flares at the back of my eyes, the impact rattling my teeth. My brother disappears behind a pitch-black shield.
What's that mean? Impervious.
Barletta's question ripped me out of the memory, dragging me back into the present. Impenetrable, essentially.
Who were they? Who took your brother?
At the time, I didn't know. I'd later learned they were ordered to take one of us, and because I'd pissed myself, they'd opted to take my brother.
What happened to your brother?
We'll save that bit for next time.
Chapter 25. Lilia. My pulse throbbed in my ear as I climbed off the Noctacadia bus to Emmerich Tower. While Spencer prattled on beside me, talking about some campus event coming up, I ignored him, my mind glued to the visual of me touching myself in public. What the hell was I about to do? I'd touched myself before, but only a couple of times, and never outside of piles of blankets and pillows. I'd always been too nervous of Connor walking in on me, so the sessions had always been quick and rarely ever satisfying. Earlier, I'd stumbled upon some blog offering tips for how to create one of the videos without drawing a lot of attention. Tips for masturbating in public. That was what my life had become. The blog had advised not wearing underwear beneath a skirt to avoid the awkward task of having to pull them down or push them aside while filming. So I chose a skirt that reached my knees and spent an hour walking around my room while trying to banish the absolutely unnatural vulnerability of having my nether region uncovered. I hated the feeling of being naked. Even after showers, I felt the need to dress quickly, so the cool air breezing up my skirt as I walked to class sent a chill up the back of my neck. The bad kind of chill. We made our way into the lab, and I scurried to my desk, donning my lab coat as usual. My mind wound over how to logistically carry out the task, and I frowned, trying to imagine holding the camera between my legs with one hand. $200. $200. The easiest $200 you'll ever make. My whole body trembled as I settled onto my stool and spread my knees apart in the little alcove cut into the desk. Thankfully, drawers boxed in either side of me, and in as subtle a movement as I could muster, I removed my camera while the other students took their seats and glanced down to press the camera app. After shifting it to video, I snagged a glimpse of Spencer, quickly turning away. Please don't let him watch me the whole time. It was bad enough thinking about doing the unthinkable in the middle of class, but to have Spencer's eyes on me the whole time would make it absolutely miserable. In an effort to keep with the schoolgirl theme Jada had mentioned, I'd worn my gray plaid skirt that fanned out at the hem. When Ross finally arrived and all of the students had settled in, my pulse hammered harder. The worst part was over, showing up to class without underwear. According to the website, all I had to do was record for 2 minutes. 2 minutes, 120 seconds, $200, I reminded myself. Exhaling a shaky breath, I pressed play and positioned the camera between my thighs, holding it there. As Ross launched into his lecture, I swallowed a gulp, breathing hard through my nose. Come on, Lilia. 2 minutes. Camera lodged between my knees, I assured it was positioned correctly, and pushed it closer up my thighs. From the bottle clipped to my bag beside me, I took a quick squirt of hand sanitizer and cleaned my hands as thoroughly as possible. Then, resting one arm against the tabletop, I slid my other hand up my skirt, wincing when my fingers met my bare flesh. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm doing this. One deep breath, and I moved my finger up and down my seam, my thigh muscles clenching on contact. Swallowing a gulp, I kept my eyes on Ross, who went on, giving a recap of last week's lab, and as he talked, I kept on with the gentle strokes, up and down, acclimating myself to the task. 30 seconds down. My mind scrambled to process what the hell I was doing, and when it finally caught up to reality, something shifted inside of me. A slippery wetness slid across my fingertips. In the dull black benchtop, a face came to mind. Copper eyes, deep voice, stern brows.
My apologies for interrupting.
My gaze snapped toward the front of the room, where Professor Bramwell strode in like a dark knight in his black shirt and slacks beneath a stark white lab coat. The tickle low in my stomach had me shifting in my seat as he took his place at the front of the room. I pulled my hand away from my sensitive flesh, resting my soaked finger against my inner thigh where I attempted to wipe the fluid away.
I'm seeing a slight reduction in larvae, and I believe the issue is that you're squeezing the forceps too hard when you transport the adult worms to the tank.
As he went on to describe how to delicately handle the parasite, I watched his hand movements, focusing on his fingers and tuning out the topic. They were the perfect length. Not too thin, but not too thick, either. Perfect enough to imagine them buried inside of me. Oh, God, stop. Without much thought, I found myself mindlessly brushing my finger over my seam again. Unlike earlier, when Ross had lectured, I couldn't look away from Professor Bramwell. His deep voice caressed my ear, sending a shiver across the back of my neck. I kept my eyes locked on those hands as he spoke, and imagined rough palms over my skin. Before I could stop myself, the fantasy took root in my mind, and I plunged my finger in and out of me. A tenacious need curled in my belly, muscles stiffened. My thighs shook as he continued to address the class, and I lost myself in the vivid fantasy of him finger-fucking me. A glance around the room showed no one, not even nosy Spencer looking at me. Once I could get past the reality of what I was doing and accept it. Contrary to my initial thoughts, it was thrilling. The game of quietly bringing myself to climax in a room full of people. I panted as I focused on Bramwell with enough intensity I noticed the slight scar at his neck peeking up from his collar. My fingers plundered with greed, so wet that the fluids leaked down my thighs. My muscles tightened tighter. Bramwell's eyes landed on me then. I sucked in my bottom lip, panting hard through my nose, trying to keep a poker face while my body shook in chaos. A cramping ache seized my hand where it was bent at an odd angle, and I fought to keep the upper part of my arm from moving while my fingers went to town. An insatiable need to climax coiled low in my stomach. I needed it. The tension inside of me wound so tight the phone slipped. En route to the floor, it smacked one of the drawer handles with a clattering thwack that echoed through the room before it bounced out of reach. A zap of horror shot through me, and I scrambled from my seat to pick it up. In my panic, I didn't notice the lecture had quieted and Ross had taken over again until shiny black shoes stepped into my periphery and I followed the length of the black slacks upward to find Professor Bramwell's disapproving stare. My eyes shot to the phone, still recording, and I prayed he wouldn't look down. I recalled Spencer's words on the first day, how he didn't like to be recorded and would confiscate the phone if he found evidence of it. As a distraction, I held that scornful gaze far longer than I wanted to. Please don't look. My heart caught in my throat when he glanced down at it. I bent further to swipe it up, but not before he snatched it first. The blood drained from my face. No, 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 please. While Ross continued to speak to the class, who didn't seem to notice the chaotic scene going on at the back corner, Professor Bramwell leaned into me. The feel of him being so close, his delicious cologne snaking its way down my throat, and his warm cinnamon breath against my neck shot my pulse into a frenzy.
Tell me you aren't recording my classes, Miss Vespertine.
He spoke low, but the depth of his voice tickled my senses. Swallowing past the dryness in my throat, I shook my head. I'm not, I whispered.
The NDA you signed gives me permission to confiscate your phone, if I suspect that you are.
Alarms blared inside my head as the scene played out like a terrifying nightmare. Please don't.
Then, you will delete whatever you were recording in front of me. Right now.
A quick glance at Spencer showed him staring over his shoulder at the two of us, a quizzical frown wrinkling his face. And if you confiscate it, what will you do? Delete it yourself?
I'm not legally allowed to look through your phone, Miss Vespertine.
He leaned in even closer, and God help me, it took the willpower of a freaking nun not to turn and confirm how close his lips were to mine.
That would be an invasion of privacy. Grounds for consequences.
Gaze glued to the black benchtop, I breathed through my nose to stifle the shaky, panting breaths clogging my throat. But you would still ask me to delete the recording after?
I would be more inclined to trust you to do it yourself, if you were willing to turn over your phone. You're either guilty or you're not.
I didn't have much choice. If I deleted it in front of him, he'd surely see the video of my pussy right in his face. No doubt I'd get kicked out of his class and possibly the university. If I allowed him to take the phone, there was a chance he'd see it anyway. But then he'd have to admit to having watched it. It boiled down to confessing what I'd done or playing into the lie. Take it. I wasn't recording intentionally. I dropped my phone and the record button accidentally went off. But if you don't believe me, you're welcome to take my phone. Damn near sweating, I waited for the guy to call my bluff and ask if it was so innocent, why not just show him? Straightening, he stood over me in that authoritative stance of his, jaw flexing as if he were grinding his teeth right then.
Very well. I'll return it at the end of the lab.
The moment he walked away, I let out a shaky breath and returned to my seat. Stupid, stupid, stupid. As if life couldn't get any shittier, I faced the possibility that my phone wouldn't have locked right away, and he'd watch the mortifying video, and of course not say a word about it. Humiliation flared in my cheeks, and I wanted to collapse with the exhaustion of having to stress about that on top of everything else. Would he search for a reason to fail me? Or say to hell with invasion of privacy and view it anyway, then turn me in for indecency? Either way, my chances of finding out more about his research had just slipped through my hands, literally. Another glance toward Spencer showed him flicking his brow, as if to ask what had happened. With a subtle shake of my head, I turned away from him, my eyes burning with tears while anger rose up into my throat. He wouldn't have understood. None of them understood the desperation, especially not Bramwell. I hated their little perfect, privileged lives, where all they had to think about was what designer purse to pair with their outfit the next day. "Stop it, Lilia," my head chided. "Just stop it." I reluctantly dragged my attention back to Ross, desperate for distraction, but the monotony of his lecture only threw me back into the visuals of Bramwell watching what I'd done. All he'd have had to do was tap the screen to keep it from locking within that first 2 minutes. Would he have bothered? The questions battering my skull were endless. My only saving grace might have been the man's reputation. If the rumor behind the scars I saw on his neck were true, then surely he would never risk the accusation of another scandal with a student.
Chapter 26, Devrick. I carried the phone down into the lower-level lab, staring at the brightly lit screen. The moment it dimmed, I touched the space between icons to keep it from locking. Fuck invasion of privacy. I'd already trusted people attempting to steal my research twice, and I'd be damned if I'd let some newly minted adolescent attempt the same. The fact she had such in-depth knowledge of the organism already put her on my radar, but to have detailed its clinical manifestation in such depth sent up a red flag where her intentions were concerned. I reached my office in the lower lab, where Lippincott had so kindly removed all of the cameras. Once there, I clicked on the photo icon, and the image in the small preview window had me frowning. In the tiny corner square, the background of which was mostly dark, I could just make out what looked like her hand beneath the hem of her skirt. Fuck. I tossed the phone onto the bench and stepped back, staring down at it. I was wrong. So very wrong. Don't do it. I wanted to say it was the bullshit story of needing to know if she'd recorded my class, but that was a lie. The infuriating truth was, I needed to see if she'd had the balls to do something so bold and outrageous right in front of me. Rubbing the back of my neck, I paced beside the desk. Why? Why look, when I had a perfectly good idea of what was on that video? The screen dimmed, and I lurched to keep it from locking me out. The moment I tapped the screen, it sent the video into motion. In the background, I could only just pick up the mumbled voice of Ross. The camera seemed to be positioned between her knees, given the short length of her thighs and the hem of her skirt at the top of the viewing screen. An unrelenting ache twisted in my stomach, and I wanted to say it was disgust churning there, but I knew better. A long, slumbering, and vile greed throbbed in my groin. The camera slid closer toward the dark depths beneath her skirt, and the moment she peeled back the hem, allowing some light, my knees damn near buckled. Her pussy arrived in perfect view, shaved clean of every hair, and when she pressed two fingers against her folds, opening herself up, I bit my knuckles while staring down at that beautiful pink shell. Fuck me. Fuck me. At first, she only toyed with her seam, tickling the tiny pearl of flesh that had the tips of my fingers tingling. My apologies for interrupting. I heard myself say in the background, and her thigh twitched, making the view jump. All at once she stopped, her finger resting on her thigh, where I watched her wipe away the glisten on her skin. Stop. Stop it now, you crazy fuck. After all, I'd been embroiled in enough scandals throughout my life. The last, involving a student, hadn't even warranted the reputation I'd earned. I'd never touched her, never felt the slightest inclination, and yet I'd been made out as some kind of predator. Thankfully, a complete lack of evidence and a fairly solid alibi had cleared my name, but I swore I'd never get tangled in a mess like that again. Not when my research was on the verge of greatness. Not when this dreary stretch of failures I'd been living was about to take flight into a whole other stratosphere of success. Just as I reached to turn off the video, she moved her hand again. I froze, watching her finger tease that mouth-watering bit of flesh. Eyes screwed shut. I shook my head. Don't do this. The girl had to be at least 12, maybe 13 years younger than me. A woman, but young. And a student, for fuck's sake. A lewd, wet sound, like ASMR porn, had me opening my eyes to see two of her fingers disappearing up inside of her, my voice still prattling on in the background. In and out, she pumped those wet digits, while I unwittingly gave my lecture. Again, I bit my knuckles, damn near gnawing them to keep from taking hold of the painful erection blooming behind my zipper. I couldn't take it anymore. I paused the video and swiped out of the app altogether. A ravenous hunger shook my muscles. In all the years I'd taught, as a TA in grad school, a resident in medical school, and as a professor, I'd never felt such sexual temptation. Ever. I'd been boldly propositioned by students and endured their flirtations, but I'd always been very adept at ignoring it all. I'd never had any interest in my students, not even the ones who'd shown up to class wearing makeup and tight, revealing clothes, making eyes at me and leaving gifts. One even left a scrap of paper with a note to meet her in the library at a certain time. Beautiful girls with money and bright futures, and yet I'd never once taken the bait. I wasn't stupid enough to destroy my reputation over some silly schoolgirl fascination, not even when that fascination had bordered on a strange obsession, as was the case with Jenny Herrick. But it was the audacity of this girl that crawled beneath my skin, the way she sat in my class with her wild hair that reminded me of autumn leaves, her mouthy comebacks, and those eyes. Bold, aquamarine eyes that constantly challenged me. Eyes I imagined were staring straight at me while she fingered herself in my class. I should have been furious with her, but it was the most exciting fucking thing I'd ever seen, perhaps an effect of the last injection I'd taken. I'd thought the sexual urges had declined over time, seeing as I'd lost interest with Loretta so quickly. Yet, clearly, they hadn't. In fact, I dared say it had gotten worse. The light on her screen dimmed again, and I swiped it up, keeping it from locking. On a whim of absolute adrenaline, I sent the video to my phone, then clicked on her texts and deleted it permanently. While there, I saw a couple of text threads, one to someone named Connor. I clicked on a thread, reading through her most recent conversation. All I could gather was that Connor owed some money for someone named B's tuition. Whether he was her boyfriend or husband, I couldn't tell. There were no other texts prior to that, as if she'd erased them. The second thread was to someone named Jada, regarding a website named Voyeurbait. Frowning, I punched the address into my phone in incognito mode, and was greeted by a video of a woman masturbating at a library. The header on the page read, "Easy money. Submit your videos and get paid." It occurred to me right then that she'd made the video for cash. I clicked back to her texts with Connor, and suddenly the story came together in my head. It seemed whoever he was had screwed her out of much-needed money. She wasn't into public gratification by nature, from the looks of it, as I perused boring campus shots on her camera, but only out of desperation. A flash of her wet fingers plunging into her pussy slid into my thoughts like a poisonous vapor that quickly evaporated, leaving me sick and drunk. The fact she'd seemed to enjoy her little assignment sent a shiver down my spine. A wiser man would have kicked her out of his class and avoided the inevitable headache that was sure to follow. I'd certainly never profess to be the wisest. Before the end of the hour, I returned to the lab where I found Ms. Vespertine sitting at her bench, well composed, looking completely innocent with her bright doe eyes and cupid bow lips. As I approached, my gaze caught on her legs, and I winced at the visual of them flexed around the phone camera. Fucking hell. How could I ever look at the girl again after that video? I was great.